Welcome to the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast. I'm Ashland Dave, and I'm recording live from my podcast studio in Ashland, Virginia. Thanks for coming along. This is Ashland Dave, and this is the Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, episode 241. I'd like to thank you for coming along. Very grateful that you're here. This is going to be part one of two parts of my podcast and about the effort at the Trail Marathon in Pinckney, Michigan, that took place on April 30th of 2017. It was a very successful day. Matter of fact, the whole trip was just outstanding. I'm really going to break it down. Obviously, I have a lot of people to thank. I'll get to that as I get through my stack of stuff here. The marathon was a 50K that I ran. My 32nd marathon, I think it was my 15th ultra, so I'm almost at the point now where half of my marathons are ultra marathons. And I just couldn't be happier with really the whole thing. It was the 50K was on the Pottawatomie Trail in Pinckney Recreational Area, about a half hour or so, maybe a little longer from Ann Arbor, kind of I think to the northwest a little bit, and area called Pinckney, Michigan, not far from I think we were near Dexter, Michigan. It was a little town we went through that I thought was really cool. And, oh, what can I say? I mean, this was a hilly-ass course, just as advertised. Two 13.1-mile loops and then a 5-mile loop. But I did talk to somebody who disputed that distance, and I'll get to that later in the show. But I just had just an outstanding time all around. I was up there for several days, renewed some an old friendship, and extended some existing friendships, made some new friends. Just took Michigan by storm. That's what I did. I got up there, you know, from Virginia, and everybody I met was just so nice and giving. And I had a little bit of an emotional meltdown around mile 22 of the race, which I'll talk about because I got a whole stack of stuff here. I mean, I just got stuff, a whole pile of things to go over. So that's why it's going to be parts one and two. So let me just kind of give a little bit of a description of how things played out in case you have no idea what I'm talking about. I have been talking about this for several episodes ever since I signed up for it. I finished the race. I came in 6 hours, 53 minutes, 47 seconds, which was not last place. It was good for 102nd place out of 130 finishers. I don't know how many people started. I looked at the race standings, and I didn't see the DNFs in there. Didn't come in last in my age group, but I came pretty close. And 6:53 is really not a bad 50K time for me. Each 50K course I've run, with the exception of the Charlotte Ultra, which was completely flat, I have always run over 6 hours. And I actually had estimated around 6 hours when people were asking me. I thought that would be pretty decent. I had no idea how hilly this course was going to be, and thank goodness I did lots of hill repeat training because it helped. It didn't solve the problem of the hills, but it definitely helped. So what I did is after I made this decision to go up there, I got invited up, and I'll talk about that. And my whole, like I said, I got a whole stack of stuff here. It'll be parts one and two. Make sure you stick around for part two. Make sure you stick around for the whole show. Flew out of Richmond, flew to Boston, then Detroit, got picked up by my friend Marisa that lives in Ann Arbor. And she would ultimately then be my crew for the race. She's a marathoner herself. Met her many, many years ago when my fraternity chapter did a road trip up to Purdue. There was a real big chapter up there, and there were lots of, we interact with lots of fraternity brothers. They had different events, so you got to know some of the people up there. And then they had some little fraternities generally have little sisters. And so, you know, you get to know some people. And then there was a kind of a reconnection over the last, I guess, last year, once we kind of figured out, hey, I think I know you. So, but I got invited up there. Then I knew Sandy from the, who's a main regular character on the podcast. And then it just kind of made sense to take the trip. I found a race. I was invited first. I didn't invite myself. And once I got the invite and realized that nobody was luring me in to kill me or anything like that, I went ahead and made plans booked my flights, registered for the race. I couldn't believe I was doing it. And here I've done it and come back. And in some ways, I can't believe I went up there and did all this. So we drove to Ann Arbor, stayed with Marisa's family there. She's married, got two kids, beautiful place. Did a little visiting, got to meet all the people in her running group, which was interesting. And saw some of Ann Arbor. Just so happened that the University of Michigan was having graduations that weekend, so everything was kind of crowded and people were everywhere. But I got to see a lot of different stuff there. And one of the highlights was a place called Zingerman's, which is a delicatessen there, or deli. And had coffee there, ended up having lunch there. And then we went to Zingerman's Roadhouse, another Zingerman's location, for a breakfast later on. So we went to it several times. It's really a great place. I think it's a local, kind of locally famous, and it's extended out from there. And met the owner, Eric. Lots of talking about running, just really, really nice. And part of the fun of talking with people from a different part of the country is the comparison of terminology of stuff. And the biggest takeaway from, you know, when you get adults together, you eventually talk about drinking and stuff, and I like drinking beer. And so I like to know, like, where do you get your beer? Do you have to go to a liquor store? Do you have to go to a package store? Do you have to go? Because every state has a little different situation. Well, in Michigan, it's the party store. And I had never heard that before. But the party store is apparently the place where you can go and get your liquor, because I guess that means that the party started. And then we kind of had some comparisons of the versions of mixed drinks versus cocktail. Convertible versus comfortable. People were making fun of the way I was talking, and I really never figured out the difference between the way I was talking and the way they were, although it did sound different. But that didn't last too long, because really everybody got along real well, and I just couldn't have been happier with the host situation. And that was just the first host. I got hosted by two families, and during the the good thing about being up there was that I got to do a lot of relaxing, and that was really fun. The day before the race was a really chilled out day. Got to do a lot of just chilling out, resting the legs. Didn't really know what to expect. I kept checking the weather forecast, because it was constantly threatening rain, and there was actually thunderstorms in the forecast. And as it turns out, it hardly rained at all. It was just overcast. I think it might have gotten in the upper 50s, maybe not. I wore a long sleeve shirt all day and a short sleeve shirt under it with shorts. But come Sunday morning, the race started at 7:30. So we got out there. And there was a little bit of coordinating to do, because my host and my ultimate crew, one and only crew, Marisa, she had a piano recital for her kids that day. And so, which came up, apparently was scheduled after I had already made plans to go up there, book my flights. So clearly I was going to be hosted, I guess. And it would have been a little awkward if I would have been, at that point asked to stay somewhere else. So, but it all worked out. She was able to get back, watch the recital while I was running. What happened was I ran the first 13.1 mile loop, and then I talked to some guy that disputed that, said it was 13.6, and he was a little bit of an authority on this, so I'll get to that in a little bit. So I finished that, and my crew was there, and I did a sock change because my feet were soaked, and I dried them all off. Things were looking good. I wore the old Ultras. I still have some mileage left on them, but boy, I was whipped. I was whipped after the first mile. That's really after I ran the first mile, I actually thought to myself, this is going to be one hell of a day. This is going to take me all day. There's no way I'm going to finish this in 6 hours. It's going to be 7 hours plus. I might even be chasing the 8 hour cutoff. But that didn't happen. I ended up, clearly clear in 7 hours. But so my crew was there after I finished the first loop, which was real nice. We had prearranged to set up a spot to put everything, put my drop bag. I had my big plastic bin and a backpack with dry clothes, not knowing what the forecast was going to be. And then I had arranged to put all that in a trash bag to keep the water off. if it had started raining and they didn't have a tent for the drop bags. But it turned out they did have a tent. They just it didn't seem to be set up right away when we got there. And so my crew was there when I finished the first loop, which was nice. In and out real fast. Sock change, didn't change the shoes. Everything was working good. It took me 2 hours, 39 minutes to do that first 13.1 miles. So I am generally in the heat about a 220 half marathoner. I have cleared 2 hours before in the half marathon, but that was on a road course, completely flat. That was at Shamrock. I don't think I've ever repeated that before, and I was much younger then. But generally, I'm anywhere between, I ran 208 at the Richmond half year before last. Of course, that was, that had hills too, because that was in Bryan Park in the city of Richmond. I'm generally a 210 to 220 to 225 half marathon. Well, the half marathon, the first 13.1 miles didn't really matter that much because you're not finished at the end of that. So I spaced it out. I walked the hills, ran the flats, ran the downhills. Never fell down, although there were plenty of opportunities. I thought I was going to a few times, but I caught myself. Talked to some people on the trail, you know, met some different folks. The aid stations were excellent. So once you did one loop, you kind of knew what the majority of the race was going to be. So I came in, finished the first loop, met with my crew, got taken care of, head back out. That's when my crew had to leave to go do the family stuff. And so there was a chance that there was not going to be anybody back. So we had planned for that, which was fine. I really had just asked to get a ride at the end. But all that worked out fine. And then I was going to make a transition over to meet up with Sandy, which ended up being the next day. So I came in at the end of the second loop, and that one took me over 3 hours. And so I knew at that point I was going to be having some trouble. However, what happened was around before I finished that second loop, I remember it was around mile 22 because I think I sent a text to my wife, and I came to the realization that everything just kind of hit me all at once. I had a little bit of an emotional moment, and I've had this happen to me sometimes in these long races where just a lot of feelings kind of come all at once, and it's a real positive thing. It's nothing negative at all. I was having a very positive day. I was not, I did get a little dark patch before the 20 mile mark, low energy. I had a good attitude, but I just couldn't seem to peck my way out of, not being able to keep running. Like I actually walked some downhills and was walking some flats because I just couldn't bring myself to start running again. I think I did a goo, maybe had, what did they have at the aid stations? They had a lot of like banana slices. Well, I managed to get up to mile 22, and then all of a sudden I had this realization of a lot of feelings coming all at once. Like I said, you know, here I am at my 32nd marathon. I knew I was going to finish. I mean, I've done the math. I knew I was going to come in 8 hours. It's really just a matter of would I be able to break seven with a lot of the walking I was doing. You know, so many people just give so much to me for me to get where I was that day. And it all kind of hit me all at once. And I've kind of said this before in the podcast, and I'm just going to kind of go through a little analysis of it here in the show, is, you know, marathoning, ultra marathoning, if you're not doing it to raise money for charity, I don't. I mean, I do it for my own personal growth. I give money to charity in other ways in my community. It's not directly related to my running. It's just the way it is with me. I mean, I'm not against people that do charity stuff, but for me, my running, the running the ultra marathons, the 50 miles I've done, the marathons I've done, it's all for my own personal achievement. So it's selfish, not in a negative way. It's all about myself. But to get there, so you're able to have that feeling, a lot of people have to give of themselves to you. And so all of a sudden just hit me all at once. And first and foremost is my beautiful wife, Monica, that supports the sport that I do, tolerates it, supports it, is positive about it, doesn't laugh, doesn't, you know, make fun of me. She is, I think, happy that I achieve these personal goals that I set for myself. And she, you know, let me go up all the way up to Michigan and hang out with some people that she didn't really know. And, you know, that's very giving of her. And that was, you know, much appreciated. And, you know, she's the one that takes care of things here at the house while I'm out on those long training runs on Saturday mornings or if I need to run in the evening. And So first and foremost, you know, it's her, and she keeps the fort down, kept the fort, you know, down while I was out of town. And she does every time when I'm out of town with some of these things. She screwed me before. She crewed me through the Florida Keys, which was kind of hard for her because she and another girl were sharing the same car trying to crew two runners that were miles apart, which turned out to be a little bit of a disaster, and we'll never repeat that again. We'll get two cars next time if we ever go back to the Keys. So that's first and foremost, and I recognize a lot of what she gives for that. And then secondly are the folks that hosted me. And, you know, for this particular trip, you know, the family that hosted me the first time, Marie's and her husband, Corey, their children. They had a couple other house guests also for the piano recital, which made it for a very interesting time. You know, got to talk to lots of different people. And it's just a beautiful place, you know, very comfortable. You know, they told me my money was no good. So, you have people paying to feed you. They're buying supplies for you. They're you offer money, but they won't take it. I mean, it's just very, very giving, and you know, much appreciated. And that stirs up an emotional response. You know, maybe not something you verbalize right away, but certainly something that you internalize. And then, of course, on the tail end of my trip, you know, Sandy and Eric. Sandy has become a good friend. We've run a marathon together. We ran Blue Ridge. The Blue Ridge Marathon together several years ago. Pretty much the whole day we were together. We got split up a few times, but the goal was really just to hang out and talk while we climbed those mountains in Roanoke, Virginia. And she has the same profession as me, and so does her husband. So we have that connection also. And they got two dogs. I got a dog. I mean, the other family had a dog as well. It was really cool. You know, they took me out for beers. Showed me around, gave me a tour of the city of Detroit. We met up with Dirt Dog, Mike Croy, of all people. We met up with another podcaster that I like. Had a great dinner, shared stories. Everybody was just so happy and fun. And, you know, they took time out of their day to come get me where we had an exchange point in near Clawson, I think is where we were, a Royal Oak. And, you know, I was going to rent a car initially, and then I was told, you don't need to rent a car. We'll take you wherever you need to go. I mean, that's what these people did for me. And it just all came and hit me at one time when I was around mile 22. That and the fact of how supportive my wife is, how nice these Midwestern folks are that I met, Michiganders, whatever y'all call it themselves, the funny talking people. And it was just kind of overcome with the generosity, and I hope I'm able to extend that to somebody else sometime. You know, kind of pay it forward. I made some other notes here in my stack of stuff that I'm kind of getting off tangent here. And then let me talk about my training partners. Okay, I've talked about Ashlyn, Tom, Ashlyn, Brian, even Ashlyn Bob is in there for some of those. You know, these are guys that. They knew I had a big event coming up, and they know that I'm doing different mileage as them on the Saturday. But they adjust their schedule so they can finish with me, as opposed to, hey, I'll run the first five with you, but then I got to go. You know, they arrange their schedule so for the majority of the time, because I noticed, I didn't make notes, but I noticed this. You know, they would finish their run when I'm finishing mine. So we could all go and have breakfast together at the Caboose, which is our little watering hole. And hell, we even had a flight of beers on a couple of those days at 10 in the morning. So that's just because, you know, I think one of them was the 20 miler I did. The other was the 18 miler because I knew I was going to be going home and napping anyway. And so that's much appreciated too. You know, and these are guys that Ash and Tom, Ash and Brian, you know, my best friends here. You know, I mean, they're my best friends here. I'm spending all the time with these guys on the weekend, you know, setting up our run, talking about stuff. And you just get to know people so well when you spend so much time together, and the giving of their time is much appreciated as well. So all these things spun around in my head around mile 22 when I passed that middle mile marker. And then I think I sent my wife a text message and just telling her, you know, this is going to work out real good. And, you know, I got a little emotional because, you know, I go through my week, my day, you know, go through my life. And sometimes you kind of take it for granted what you have. And then there are some days that you don't. And all of a sudden, just everything's just right in front of you. And you realize it. And you appreciate it. And I think that's what we're supposed to do. So let me come up some of my notes here. I just really can't say enough of the hospitality that was extended. I'll get into some of the details of the race a little bit more in part two. But I can't say enough about the hospitality that was extended to me by my friends. I kind of live by the doctrine of paying it forward. If you don't know what that is, I'll try to explain it. It's kind of, you don't really live in a barter system with your friends. What you do is when someone extends a kindness to you, maybe something that surprises you, you don't have to pay them back. You pay it forward to somebody else and you're giving to them. I'm not really trying to brag about some of the kindnesses that I know I've extended to people and strangers over the years. But I really think that in some ways that it was paid forward back to me because of the doctrine that I try to live by. And, you know, we always fall short. None of us are ever perfect, but, maybe that was kind of, you know, when things come full circle, you know, what comes around goes around. And maybe that's how all this worked out. You know, I'm dealing with really nice people. I don't hang out with cruel people, and I'm not friends with cruel people, and I don't want to be friends with cruel people, but I'm also not looking to be friends with nice people so I can get stuff. I just want to be treated with respect, and I'll treat them with respect. It's really, you know, it's not a barter system when you're nice to each other. I think it's just the way the humans should treat each other. And I don't feel like it's a give and take. But when I was invited up there, you know, this is really where I'm going to go on a tangent and probably get close to wrapping up this part on this, because this is going to be a little bit of a ramble. Because of what I do for a living, okay, I'm a police officer. I've said that before, 25 years this summer. That's a long time to be doing what I do. And I've gotten very jaded in my life with the way I look at people and the way I look at situations and how I size things up very quickly, because generally you're right. And I've always made it a point to have lots of friends outside the profession. And I got plenty of friends in the profession. We do plenty of events that are, you know, cops only. But I always thought it was healthy to have friends outside the profession. And that was some advice that I got early on in my career, and I stayed with it. But I've always kind of been very cautious about when I get invited somewhere. And, you know, I've always, over the years, I've kind of, we won't do that. Or I'll give you an example, okay? It's just within my own family. We've been invited down to the Mississippi Gulf Coast several occasions to spend time with my family that lives there. This is pre-Katrina and after Katrina, because they had to get their house repaired. And we're just now finally going to be accepting that invitation. I mean, I don't know why it's taken so long. And it has nothing to do with the fact that I'm suspicious of anybody. I'm kind of mixing my ideas here. But generally, we just say, we'll pass on that. Well, I decided that for this trip, when I got invited to come up there, when the idea was discussed, and I'd never been to Michigan, and I wanted to get Michigan on my list of states for marathons, and it just clicked in my head that, you know, Dave, you know people up there, you got invited up there, it's okay to get out of your comfort zone, and because I like staying in my comfort zone, stuff I can control, stuff I know what to expect. I don't like getting out of that comfort zone too often, and this was going to cause me to do that. And I don't mind meeting new people, but as long as I'm on the fringe of my comfort zone, I feel like I have some control. So I just felt so liberating when I decided to accept the invitation and go on up and visit with the two host families, run a race, go to a new state, and essentially just spend several days listening to other people talk about how cool their area is. Because believe me, when people come visit the Ashland area, We love to talk about how cool Central Virginia is and how cool the Piedmont region is and how cool the Shenandoah Valley is and how beautiful the Blue Ridge Mountains are and how we're 2 miles from the mountains or 2 hours from the mountains and 2 hours from the beach. And so I accepted the invitation. I got out of my comfort zone, see a different part of the country, spend time learning about other people, how they live, you know, what they fear, you know, what they embrace. As a human, I couldn't refuse that. Like I said, I used to be so cautious when I started my podcast, and I've met some really, really cool people through producing this podcast. And if you're one of those, you know who you are, because we see each other in person, and we'll probably continue to do that, and that's very much appreciated. And those friendships have a lot of value to me. And so I'm not going to be so cautious anymore. I mean, I'm going to be cautious because it makes sense. But like, I know somebody in New Zealand now. I know somebody in Arizona now. I know people in Michigan now. I know multiple people in Michigan now that are runners. It's multiple, not just a few, but multiple people in Michigan that run. I know people in Maryland, Tennessee. That's all that comes to mind right now. Maybe there aren't any more. Maybe that's it. But I really just think that listening to other people, listening to them talk about what's going on in their area, gives you different perspectives. I think it makes you a better citizen, better husband, better father, better worker, better runner. In my case, better police officer. You know, I can see different perspectives. This was an epic trip for me. I know it was just traveling to another state, but I was just overwhelmed with the hospitality and the kindness that was extended to me that I don't experience that much. I mean, not that people are mean to me. It's just people were just so giving of their time, resources, and it moved me to the point where I decided to the part one of this podcast was going to be about that, because that it was not missed on me. And it's so much appreciated, and it's maybe more something that I'm feeling rather than what I kind of explain. It was just an epic trip for me at this point of time in my life. I'm getting ready to turn 48 years old. I've got, at that point, I'll be 2 years away from police retirement, eligibility, and my life will be going in a different direction at that point, more than likely. So, in a good way. I mean, I've had a good career. I want to go out while I'm on top, as opposed to getting in some stupid shooting or hurting somebody or making a huge blunder that is going to ruin my life. I've made it this far. So I'm so glad I made the trip, and maybe someday I can be that backbone for somebody else that they come to the Richmond area. So I'm going to go ahead and leave it right there for part one. I'll resume part two, Running in the Center of the Universe podcast, Michigan, special Michigan episodes, part two will be coming up next. Make sure you stand by. I'll have that one ready as soon as possible. This is Ashland Dave, and I'm running in the center of the universe, Ashland, Virginia, reminding you to run to the finish, keep on running, don't forget to hug your kids, and stick around for part two.